This is Jay Sekulow. The first lawsuit has been filed challenging the declaration of a national emergency.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
Can you say definitely that California will be filing a lawsuit and when that will happen?
Martha, definitely and imminently.
And imminently Monday, nothing will stop you?
No reason. We are prepared. We knew something like this might happen. And with our sister state partners, we are ready to go.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
This is an emergency. I mean, what are we on now? The fifth caravan? So I would just ask those senators, how many caravans do we need? Six, seven, or just an endless caravan, the one that never stops? What did we have just a few weeks ago? A drug bust that with enough fentanyl to kill 57 million Americans. What do we need? 58 million, 59 million Americans? Enough fentanyl to kill that many? So you tell me. I think it's an emergency.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
All right, pursuant to 50 U.S. Code Section 1621, the president issued a declaration of national emergency on Friday. A lawsuit was filed by Public Citizen in Washington, D.C., seeking to block the declaration on behalf of three Texas landowners and an environmental group. The ACLU is threatening to file a lawsuit, and the state of California says they will file a lawsuit later today. So you've got multiple lawsuits now filed. There are existing right now 31 national emergency declarations that have been made by presidents going all the way back to President Jimmy Carter, and they are still in effect. And this is according to the Federal Register. So the first challenge on the legal issue here, the way I see it, is this. When you have a statutory reference, a statutory basis to declare a national emergency, which you do here with the Declaration of National Emergency Act that the president is exercising pursuant to, that is markedly different than when President Obama made the statements he's going to change the law. This isn't changing the law. This is utilizing the existing law to declare the national emergency. And that is an important and fundamental difference between this case and a lot of others.
Yeah, we've been really pounding that in the last Friday when this was announced by President Trump and to our audience to educate them so that they were ready as people were discussing this over the weekend. To make it clear, this is not some usurpation of executive power that's never been utilized before. We went through the 31 existing national emergencies. One of them is still one that Jimmy Carter declared when our hostages were taken in Iran. The hostages, people got killed, but there were the rest came home. There is still the revolution there. So there's reasons why I wasn't like trying to downplay these, but right. Also to show this is not what we generally think of when you hear a term national emergency. So we need to understand what it means in the context of this statute and how it's been interpreted and utilized. And it's been utilized for some things that go away. So there's been 58 declared. Some are natural disasters. So those don't get reauthorized. Others, like 1996, the plane going down in Cuba and then a reshuffling of anchorage and movement of vessels. But since then, that's still on the books. But since then, we've opened an embassy in Cuba, kind of reclosed the embassy in Cuba, opened travel, and then re-restricted travel. So a lot's changed since when Bill Clinton declared that in 1996, and yet it's still being authorized as a U.S. national emergency.
Here's the other question. I'm going to go to Andy and Harry quickly on this. And that is the basis upon which, let's say, California is going into court. Well, which is their standing?
Yeah, standing is a legal term, which means what is the particular interest that you have that affects you personally, that affects your interest personally, that gives you the right to seek relief from a federal district court? And I don't see where the state has that particular interest personally affected by this declaration.
I don't either. Harry, quick, give me a 30-second view on that.
Well, I agree with Andy. The real question is how has California or any other state been adversely affected by the president's declaration? It's far from clear that there's any evidence on the ground that any state has been adversely affected. Therefore, it's doubtful that they have standing.
We're going to file briefs in these cases as they mature, as they move forward. On those very points, including the issue of standing. So we'll do that at the American Center for Law and Justice. All right, we're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Your reaction to all of this? You standing with the president on this declaration of national emergency to build the wall? What's your sense? 1-800-684-3110. We come back from the break. We'll get an update on what's happening in Washington. Later in the broadcast, update on Pastor Saul's case. We'll be talking about that one as well.
The United States of America must never become a socialist nation. Yet the radical left is trying to force a new socialist agenda on the American people. The Green New Deal and other extreme measures. We already know that the liberal left has embraced born-alive abortion and the anti-Semitic, anti-Israel BDS movement. And now this dangerous push to embrace socialism. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we've developed a five-point legal advocacy effort to defeat this socialist agenda. 1. Expose socialism. 2. Prepare critical legal analysis. 3. Show how socialism subverts the rule of law. 4. Battle against it on Capitol Hill. And 5. Hold radical left politicians accountable. At the ACLJ, we're committed to this fight, to stop this radical agenda, to stop the destruction of our Constitution. But we can't do it alone. Stand with us. Take action with us. Sign on today to our petition to stop the radical left socialist agenda. Add your name right now online, aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. 1-800-684-3110. Pam on Facebook says, once one of these lawsuits go before the Supreme Court and President Trump is clear to proceed, will that end the rest of these lawsuits immediately? It should. It's going to, but I do think it's going to take Supreme Court action to do it. But there is a real question here of standing. I suspect the Ninth Circuit they'll find standing. In the D.C. Circuit, the case has been filed now. I'm not so sure they're going to get that. Dan, before we get to phone calls here, give us kind of an update on how it's being viewed in Washington right now, the president's action.
Yeah, I think the critics of this action on the left, Jay, are jumping into action. I think you will see the House this week introduce a resolution of disapproval. And I actually think in fairly short order, they will probably move that resolution through the House and force a Senate vote in the coming weeks. But, Jay, we talked about this during the break. I actually think that Speaker Pelosi will be inadvertently harming these lawsuits and helping the president's case by doing so. And here's why. When Congress gave this authority to the executive, which Jordan has outlined has been used dozens and dozens of times over the decades, they reserved to themselves the right to end a national emergency. It's written right into the statute itself. And by passing this resolution of disapproval through the House, I think it will demonstrate to the court that, look, if Congress wants to take back this power, if they want to end the national emergency, it is in their power to do it. Jay, I suspect when these go up through the courts, the opponents of President Trump's action here are going to regret moving this resolution of disapproval.
I want to play Martha Raddatz interviewed the Attorney General of California and ask the question that we're asking. That is, what basis does California, they say they're filing this afternoon, what is their basis to actually get into court? Take a listen.
The president seems to be focusing on a wall in Texas, not California. Are you confident your state has concrete standing to challenge this? What harm is he doing to California with this declaration? Or will you join other states? How will that work?
We're confident there are at least 8 billion ways that we can prove harm.
Yeah. What does that exactly mean? So, Harry, from a legal standpoint, I think they've got a serious issue as to having legal standing to get into court. I don't think the state of California has standing.
I think that's precisely correct,
and I think
Martha Raddatz asked a great question. How does building a wall or barrier or whatever we call it in Texas adversely affect the citizens of California? That's number one. Number two, there's another question for the Attorney General of California. He suggested that there are 8 billion ways that the citizens of California are being harmed. But as Jordan correctly points out, less than 50% of the 8 billion is actually coming from the National Emergency Declaration. So
leaving him only 4 billion.
Precisely. So Attorney General Becerra has a problem with math in addition to possibly a problem with the law.
I think the standing issue is really significant. I just don't see it.
Well, I think that...
I mean, in California, though, the Ninth Circuit could do anything, but I don't think the Supreme Court, if they got to the merits, they're going
to...
They're
going to way to get to standing. The Supreme Court may handle this by ultimately saying that there was an issue with standing, never getting to... Even if the other courts...
No, I think there's a really good chance you don't get to the merits.
But ultimately here, this is a statute that's been in place since the 70s. Again, we've gone through all these... You know, President Trump has declared three national emergencies.
Yeah, right.
Not once did I hear this. These are not how you typically would interpret that to be. So it's why it's actually more appropriate to use in this setting. These are not items that necessarily are like the sky is falling on the whole country, national emergency types, or that the bombers are on the way to the U.S. national emergency types. These are can be issues that are 3 and 4 degrees of separation between the American people and kind of our foreign policy or decision making. Here we have one. It is foreign policy because it involves your border and a foreign what's happening on the other side of the border.
Right.
And it directly affects Americans. I think there's a case that this is actually more in line with what the statute was probably the intention of the statute than a lot of the existing national emergencies that keep getting reauthorized. Like one in respect to blocking contributions from the conflict in the Democratic Republic of Congo. That is a U.S. national emergency, not a foreign policy issue, not just sanctions. But a U.S. national emergency.
Yeah, so, Than, you point out that the national emergency was used 18 times by President Bush and President Obama collectively.
Well, this goes to Jordan's point about only a portion of the funds that President Trump is going to use are actually brought into play by the national emergency. And the funds that are brought into play are these funds from the DOD's military construction budget. And that is an account that under national emergencies, Presidents Obama and Bush, George W. Bush, used, count them, Jay, 18 times. That is an account that those two presidents used 18 times to address various national emergencies. I would argue probably none of them rise to the urgency that this national emergency does. But again, it just furthers the point. We are not setting new precedent here. This is long established tradition. When there's a national emergency, this is an account, Section 2808, the military construction budget, that presidents have used to draw funds from.
There's also a fundamental difference here between what was done by President Obama. Well, look, remember when he did the immigration reform change? He said, I've changed. Do we have that bite? I want to get that bite. I want to set it up a little bit here. So, you know, and as you know, I'm in favor of comprehensive immigration reform, and I think it's something we have to have. We should do it. I think this will be the president that gets it done, actually. But what's interesting is when President Obama did this, I challenged it, saying it was not constitutional. Why? Because he was changing the existing law. He had no statutory basis upon which he was operating. And the president acknowledged it on multiple times like this.
You're absolutely right that there have been significant numbers of deportations. That's true. But what you're not paying attention to is the fact that I just took an action to change the law. Now,
except, Andy, presidents don't get to change the law.
They don't get to change the law, and President Trump is not changing the law.
He's relying on 50 U.S.C. Section
1621.
Yeah, yes, 1621, which is the Declaration of a National Emergency. President Obama did not do that.
That's right. And the Declaration of a National Emergency under the federal code is given exclusively to the power to the president. It says, with a period of national emergency during that time, any special or extraordinary power of the president is authorized to declare such national emergency period. Now, who makes that determination? Congress has said it's an executive determination. It's made by the president. And whether or not that is the case, a court, in my view, does not have what we call in the law, justiciability.
Right.
It is not within the purview of a court to substitute its judgment for what is a national emergency from that of the president.
Yeah, I agree.
Look at the statute. It is very open to interpretation. It's why you can, I think, have everything from vessels in Cuba still on the books from the 1990s to blocking property of certain persons with respect to South Sudan from 2014 that's still on the books. And then you go back and in 2010, you've got Somalia. You've got Los Zetas actually was declared by President Obama, a transnational criminal organization in Mexico.
Yep.
So there is, again, that's just examples of, these are ongoing
and they're
under
still
the
existing.
Law.
Right.
National emergencies in the United States. So this idea that you've got to like open your doors and hearing the shouts and people running down the streets. That's not what this is for.
It doesn't mean it's an imminent war taking place. I mean, like you said, President Obama used it with the situations that were developing in Mexico. I mean, that's part of it. So you have this rush to court. You got the public citizen. You've got the state of California. The normal, I would say, the ACLU is saying they're going to file suit. But Harry, you look, what they're trying to do is everything they can to stop the enforcement of the development of a border fence, wall, slats, whatever you want to call it, barrier. That's really what the goal is here. The goal is to stop. It's not just a question of the constitutionality. They don't want the policy implemented.
Absolutely. So I think you are absolutely correct. Essentially, the litigation simply represents a highly politicized effort to stop this president. Where was the ACLU? Where was the Attorney General of California when President Obama attempted to change the law? Here you have a president who is upholding the law consistent with the national emergency statutory rules. And in addition, he has constitutional powers to defend the country from all threats, foreign and domestic. So it's clear beyond question that it is pure politics all the way down. And I think the Attorney General of California has simply exposed the inadequacy of his analysis on national television. And I suspect other states will join this highly politicized effort.
When we come back from the break, we're going to be joined by Cece Howell, senior counsel. It's handling a lot of our international matters, including an update on the case involving Pastor Saw, who is in jail in China. There's some developments there. We're going to get to those in the next segment of the broadcast. We're going to continue to talk about the National Emergency Declaration. That is obviously in the news, and there's a lot of legal action taking place there. And we'll take your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Also, the ACLJ today is filing a brand new comments that's going to go into the Department of Health and Human Services. I'm holding the draft in my hand. This is... you got this issue where your insurance companies, through your employer, are still being forced, even if they don't want to pay for abortions, to do it. So now there's a comment section, and we're responding. So we're not just talking about the issue on life. We're responding, whether it's the situation that was in Virginia, whether it's at the national level right here, American Center for Law and Justice, front and center. We come back from the break, an update on Pastor Saul's case, and then we will be taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Let me encourage you also, if you're not getting the emails and alerts of the ACLJ, sign up for those at aclj.org and follow me and Jordan and the ACLJ on Twitter. Great way to stay engaged in all these issues. And again, we'll take your calls, 1-800-684-3110. Back with more in just a moment.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The United States of America must never become a socialist nation. Yet the radical left is trying to force a new socialist agenda on the American people, the Green New Deal, and other extreme measures. We already know that the liberal left has embraced born-alive abortion and the anti-Semitic, anti-Israel BDS movement. And now this dangerous push to embrace socialism. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we've developed a 5-point legal advocacy effort to defeat this socialist agenda. 1. Expose socialism. 2. Prepare critical legal analysis. 3. Show how socialism subverts the rule of law. 4. Battle against it on Capitol Hill. And 5. Hold radical left politicians accountable. At the ACLJ, we're committed to this fight, to stop this radical agenda, to stop the destruction of our Constitution. But we can't do it alone. Stand with us. Take action with us. Sign on today to our petition to stop the radical left socialist agenda. Add your name right now online, aclj.org.
All right, we're taking a break from the emergency declaration on the wall to give you an update on our case. I mentioned before the break that we are filing comments for over 200,000. Looks like it's going to be well over 200,000 people on the issue of life as it relates to HHS and health insurance and mandatory requirements of spending money for abortions. So that's going forward. The ACLJ responding tomorrow with comments on that to HHS. So we don't just talk about it. We don't just bring you the information. We take action. Again, if you're not getting the ACLJ newsletters and alerts, you need to. That's how you find out about these things. We also have a new international case we've been talking about a little bit the last couple of weeks, but it's about to kick into a very high gear. CC Howell, senior counsel for the ACLJ, heads these cases up for us. We've had, you know, great success so far this year. You had the Asiya Bibi win. You had the win with Pastor Brunson. And so it's been a very successful year last year. We've got a new case involving a pastor who's being held in China, Pastor Saul. And right now, there's not been a lot of attention on it. We just got retained about 5-6 weeks ago. But it's all of that's about to change really drastically. So, Cece, give everybody an update first as to you just said during the break that there's something significant happening every week over the next 4 weeks.
Right. At the beginning of this month, we filed a complaint with the Working Group on Arbitrary Detention.
And that's at the United Nations in Geneva.
That is correct.
Okay.
And then next week, we will have our key meetings with Congress and the administration. And then the week after that, Pastor Saw's case will be highlighted at an international religious freedom press conference focusing on China. And then the week after that, we are in Geneva, and Pastor Saw's wife will be delivering the oral intervention for him at the 40th session of the Human Rights Council, and we'll follow up with the working group on arbitrary detention then as well.
And that's all in the next 4 weeks?
All in the next 4 weeks.
Now, this is the playbook of the American Center for... This is how... Look, different groups do these cases in different ways. We have found that... Silence has not been the way to be successful here. And not knocking those that use a quiet diplomatic approach. We have found that's been more success when we are more upfront. So you're now building that support.
Absolutely. And we have done this, you know, when we take these cases on, there is a background check and just building the case, really. And so we are right now launching. We've started the beginning of this month, really started the push with the filing of the working group complaint. And we will follow up with that for the next 3 or 4 weeks.
So, Than, let's talk about what happens on this case in Washington.
Yeah, so we found on these cases, Jay, it's incredibly important to synchronize the efforts that Cece is talking about with the volume that the United States government is speaking on. So next week, we're actually planning on timing the escalation of the Washington voice with the efforts that Cece is talking about. Pastor Saw's wife is going to be making a case to members of the House and Senate, meetings on both sides of the Hill, as well as making the case to the White House and the State Department on behalf of her husband. And Jay, what we have found in this case is that if you time all three of those things together, the international press, the domestic pressure inside the United States government, and then maybe most importantly, Jay, the public pressure when people hear the stories of people who've been wrongfully detained. When all three of those things come together in a synchronized manner, that's where we've seen success in the past, and so that's what we're starting to roll out next week.
And that's a process that's now engaged.
Yeah, so it's important now, I think, for our audience and for our supporters at ACLJ to start really paying attention to sharing this with your friends and family as the pastor's family engages this and takes that step of going overseas to advocate for his release, to advocate for a husband. And we're talking to his sons as well, who you'll be seeing soon in media reports, to really, again, we take it step by step, and there's the next escalation. And we've done this a number of times. So this is the time really to start paying close attention to our reports, and that'll be on radio, but also through ACLJ.org, through social media and digital media as well, as we begin to introduce you more directly to this family who is willing to take that next step too on advocacy. And I think that's important.
Well, the wife is a teacher, and I mean, she's working. The husband's been in jail. Let's talk about that for a little bit. He's been in jail for 2 years.
Yes. March 5th, it'll be 2 years that he has been in a Chinese prison. Wrongfully convicted. It's not great conditions in the prison. He's almost 60 years old. He has some health conditions, and we need to get him out as soon as possible. And it's very important, too, for us, because we have the details of the case. We're able to talk to his attorneys in China, and to be able to present these specific details and give updates to Congress members and the administration. It's very important.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. So we're at that phase, Andy, where I call it, we've done this with Brunson, where we were, you know, you escalate it, then you pull it back, and then you escalate it. We're in the escalated stage.
It is, but it's a question of persistence and perseverance is what it is, and we have to use the right pressure at a certain time and then relent at a certain time and then put the pressure at a certain time. But I think the Pastor Brunson release situation is the perfect example of how the ACLJ worked. We exercised pressure through the State Department. We exercised pressure economically on Turkey. Finally, the president really came in and put pressure on Erdogan, the president of Turkey. And miraculously, Pastor Brunson was released.
Yeah, so we're hopeful in that stage. Now, talk about the legal proceeding for a moment. Where are we in the legal proceeding?
Sure.
We're going to take the action at the international tribunals, the UN, and these others. Where are we in the proceedings in China?
Right. Pastor Saw has appealed his wrongful conviction. Unfortunately, the court continues to erroneously push back and delay his appeal hearing. So that appeal hearing has now been delayed 9 months. And the deadline for the appeal to be heard is now March 22nd. So that's okay. Another thing that we'll push for is that he needs to have his day in court. He needs to have his appeal heard.
Harry, it's interesting because when you put the international, from a policy standpoint, when you put the international pressure on and you get the United Nations involved and the working group on arbitrary detention, that gives it a different kind. It's not just the Americans speaking out at that point.
I think that is correct. So it provides, if you will, an international cast. And it's also part of what I would call an oscillating effort where we continue to put pressure on, but we also remain persistent and we attempt to engage a wider and wider audience of both nations, envoys, and others in order to secure a very necessary release.
So, Cece, what do you think is the next bit? What do you view as the next big move here?
You know, I think obviously the congressional meetings are very big because we have Congress members, House and Senate, both sides, Democrats, Republicans, that are very helpful, that don't want Americans or legal permanent residents like Pastor Saw in prison wrongfully in other countries. So that's going to be a big deal because they get very much engaged and help push. You know, even in Geneva, I know the UN sometimes, you know, we don't know exactly what they can do because there's really not a punishment arm or an engagement arm. But the Working Group on Arbitrary Detention, if they do take this case and have an opinion that finds them guilty, that does put a lot of pressure on China to do what's right.
You know, by the way, when we had that situation with the Committee on Arbitrary Detention, with the case involving Brunson, and not only did they find that Turkey was in the wrong, they said that Brunson's record should have been cleared. I mean, we beat Turkey basically in an international tribunal in that case.
Yes.
So the idea here is, of course, let's get him out. I mean, that's job one here is get the client. Well, job one is keep them alive. Job two is get them out of jail. That's kind of the priority of how we do that. Than, you're optimistic with these meetings coming up. We'll get some good congressional interest.
Yeah, I think the timing's excellent, Jay. And I go back to what Andy talked about looking for leverage points. Jay, I can't think of a better timed opportunity for Pastor Saw's wife to be here in Washington, D.C. Think about the talks that are going on between the United States and China. I know they're on separate matters. They're on economic matters. But the point here is the country is at top of mind for U.S. lawmakers. And so to put a situation like this in front of them, Jay, I think they're going to be tuned in. I think they're going to be ready to help us engage.
All right, very good. That's your update on Pastor Saw's case. We're going to come right back with more comments and questions, another 30 minutes of the broadcast.
Yeah, I really want to hear from you folks. Are you ready to fight for the president's national emergency declaration? Because there are legal battles already starting, already being filed with the courts. And you've got the California Attorney General said theirs is coming, ACLU, theirs is coming. Are you ready to fight for this national emergency declaration? We want to hear from you. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Second half hour coming up.
The United States of America must never become a socialist nation. Yet the radical left is trying to force a new socialist agenda on the American people. The Green New Deal and other extreme measures. At the ACLJ, we're committed to this fight, to stop this radical agenda, to stop the destruction of our Constitution. But we can't do it alone. Stand with us. Take action with us. Sign on today to our petition to stop the radical left socialist agenda. Add your name right now online, aclj.org.
Talking about freedom. Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
Can you say definitely that California will be filing a lawsuit and when that will happen?
Martha, definitely and imminently.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
California Public Citizen, the ACLU, all say they're going to file this lawsuit against the president's declaration of a national emergency. We'd spent the first half hour of the broadcast, at least for two of the segments, talking about how we don't even see how they get into court. What is their standing? In other words, what is the justiciable controversy here that allows them to get into court? I think that's a fundamental issue. We had an interesting comment came in on Facebook. It was from Joe. It said, is it typical for these national emergencies to be challenged in court? And Andy, the answer is no, it's not.
No, it's not. I mean, if you look at the national emergencies, and we have looked at the 31 that have been declared since Jimmy Carter, my fellow Georgian, was president of the United States. And, you know, there was a national emergency declared again by Barack Obama with respect to the Somalian pirates, by the Yakuza and Camorra families in Italy, about South Sudan, the Central African Republic, and that terrible situation that affects every one of us personally, the crisis in Burundi. Where was Xavier Becerra then to help us and fight us with his 8 million or 6 million billion. Or 10 billion. Million, billion, right, reasons that he had to challenge this? No, as Harry Hutchinson, my colleague, said, this is a political issue with respect to challenging the president's right yes. to declare an emergency and to build that wall or finish the barrier, the fencing. That's what this is all about.
Yeah, yep. I mean, the one in Burundi was written so politically correct by President Obama that, you know, I can't even determine from it. Listen to the full, this is the title of it, the national emergency with respect to blocking property of certain persons contributing to the situation in Burundi declared after a failed coup. I mean, it doesn't even define, it's like a situation. Three have been declared by President Trump. So this is his fourth now.
Right.
The first one, no one wanted to talk about this, is he declared a national emergency with respect to blocking the property of persons involved in human rights abuses against Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar.
Right.
So no one wanted to talk about the president declaring a national emergency
right.
for the protection of Muslims in Myanmar. How about the national emergency with respect to certain sanctions in the event of foreign interference in the U.S. election, specific to the Russian interference in 2016 election? No one talks about that he's done that. And in November of 2018, a national emergency with respect to blocking property of certain persons contributing to the situation in Nicaragua. Not exactly, again, items that are front. I mean, Nicaragua, right now it's Venezuela that's front and center, but yet Nicaragua listed here. Rohingya Muslims, got some news coverage, never heard that President Trump declared a national emergency on that. I mean, so it's just, it's a different, the statute has been interpreted for many, many years by many different presidents to mean something different than what we think of, our knee-jerk reaction to what it means to say national emergency.
Well, it doesn't mean that like you said, it's not, and it's not a declaration, Harry, of war here. I mean, people need to understand what the statute actually says.
Absolutely. Also, it's important to note, and I cite the New York Times. The New York Times says Congress has the tools, has the power to override the president's declaration. And so, if that's true, why do we then need litigation? I think the answer is we don't need any litigation. This is a political issue. It's non-justiciable in court. And I think hopefully most courts will agree with our analysis.
The Ninth Circuit probably doesn't, but I think the Supreme Court does. So what is going to be the action or no action in the United States House and Senate?
Well, I think they're going to introduce a resolution of disapproval, but I chuckled as Andy and Harry were talking, Jay, because look, from 2003 to 2013, Javier Becerra was a member of the House of Representatives. A whole number of those emergencies that Jordan talked about were introduced when he was a member of Congress. Jay, how many times did Javier Becerra introduce a resolution of disapproval or vote for one to end a national emergency? I haven't done the research, but I'm pretty sure the answer to that is zero.
Yeah, I suspect it's zero, too. All right, we're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. We've got a couple folks who've been holding. Tell them we'll get to them right after the break. We're going to go to break. We'll take your calls, 1-800-684-3110. ACLJ tomorrow filing comments with HHS, Health and Human Services, on the abortion issue. Your support of the ACLJ allows us to do that. Go to ACLJ.org or respond to the email we have out today, ACLJ.org, to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. Back with more, including your phone calls at 800-684-3110 in just a moment.
The United States of America must never become a socialist nation. Yet the radical left is trying to force a new socialist agenda on the American people, the Green New Deal, and other extreme measures. We already know that the liberal left has embraced born-alive abortion and the anti-Semitic, anti-Israel BDS movement. And now this dangerous push to embrace socialism. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we've developed a 5-point legal advocacy effort to defeat this socialist agenda. 1. Expose socialism. 2. Prepare critical legal analysis. 3. Show how socialism subverts the rule of law. 4. Battle against it on Capitol Hill. And 5. Hold radical left politicians accountable. At the ACLJ, we're committed to this fight, to stop this radical agenda, to stop the destruction of our Constitution. But we can't do it alone. Stand with us. Take action with us. Sign on today to our petition to stop the radical left socialist agenda. Add your name right now online, aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
All right, national emergency litigation underway. 1-800-684-3110. We're taking your calls. Let's go right to the calls.
Yep, to the phones we go. Diane in Nevada on line one. Diane, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Thank you so much for calling, taking my call.
Sure.
My curiosity is this, and maybe there's something underlying I don't understand. If Congress has already approved the wall, and that first money has gone through, how can this declaration even be challenged?
It's a really great point. They're going to challenge the declaration by saying there was no national emergency, as those that are challenging it define it. The problem that they got is the statute is very wide open on this. And I think even there's a lot of commentators, liberal commentators, that are saying the president probably carries the day here.
Yes, is that even, and these are the commentators who are at least fair, because they realize that it would look ridiculous ultimately when a court comes out, and the Supreme Court if it has to, or even a lower court that says, we don't have a standing to decide this. Even as liberal as we are, we may not like this president. We don't want to get involved in deciding, because no one ever has. What is and what isn't a national emergency? Congress could have, with this statute, they could today make a definition of national emergency. That's not here. It's not in the statute.
Yep.
It's very generic, and it's been interpreted to be even more generic than I think most Americans would even read it, and that's what's been accepted by Congress. Courts will look at that too.
Sure.
What has been accepted by Congress as proper uses of national emergencies? And if something that happens in Belarus from 2006 is still a national emergency, then anything that's going on in our border certainly would be. And I think that they say, okay, this has been accepted.
I think the history of the emergency orders, Andy's, actually is good evidence.
Well, you have to use that evidence, because when the court is looking at this, it looks at precedent and says, well, look, these are determinations that were made by the presidents of the United States since Jimmy Carter and Clinton with respect to certain things that they, as presidents in their executive power exercise, have deemed to be national emergencies. And the courts should be asking themselves this question: who are we to substitute our judgment as to what has been statutorily, 50 U.S. Code 1621, given to the president to decide?
So Gail on Facebook says, I think the lawsuits will only strengthen the arguments for the use of this law, so I say file away. Harry?
Well, I think the caller is absolutely correct. Why? Because the threats facing our borders are indeed steeply rising.
And real.
And real. So without stricter border security, our nation remains vulnerable to drugs and crime violence. they have proliferated along the U.S.-Mexico border. According to DHS, there has been a 74% increase in the amount of currency seized, a 41% increase in the amount of drugs, and a 159% increase in the amount of weapons seized along the southwest border over the last several years. In addition, we have about 7 or 8 known or suspected terrorists attempting to enter the United States on a daily basis. So what are we talking about here? We are talking about real threats in contradistinction to the other 31 national emergencies. Some of those are simply threats in the mind and the imagination of the then president.
All right, let's go ahead. We're taking more calls. 1-800-684-3110. Who's next?
Yeah, back to the phones we go. Letitia in California, online 3. Letitia, welcome to Jay Sekulow.
Hi, Letitia, you're on the air.
Thank you. Thank you, ACLJ, for all that you do and for keeping us informed.
Sure.
Also, I agree that ACLJ, I agree to stand with the president on the, on building the wall. And going back to what Becerra said, that he's got 8 billion reasons to file a lawsuit,
yep.
He has to name a reason.
Well, right. You don't get to say, you know, because that's basically taking off the $8 billion as money. You have to have a cognizable claim that gives you standing to bring federal litigation. The question, though, that I think is interesting in all of this, Than, is Congress going to, now that the president's done it, are they going to join in these lawsuits, or are they going to file a lawsuit?
I think they may, Jay. I think they may use the bipartisan legal advisory group to do it, but I think they know that their best shot at this would actually be through a resolution of disapproval. And we've talked about this a few times, Jay, but I don't think that's going to succeed, because ultimately they need a 2/3 vote in each chamber to override a presidential veto. I don't think they have that margin in either house. And Jay, I would suggest to you a further thing. I think that even the members who go down and vote in favor of a resolution of disapproval know that at the end of the day, the president is likely to carry the day here. They're just going to be doing it as a political statement. I also think it's kind of funny that Javier Becerra uses the $8 billion figure, Jay, because Jordan already disclosed this, but only 3.5 of those billions are actually invoked because of a national emergency. The rest of it, the president can do without declaring the emergency.
It tells me they don't even understand yet. So he's asked the question, what are you filing against? And somewhere he may have someone on his legal team, the attorney general, who's got some novel theories. He doesn't. So he answered that question as kind of a joke, like, oh, there's so many reasons. But the truth is there's only 3.5 of this 8 are actually from the in relation to the National Emergency Declaration. So what the president announced on Friday was a number of different ways to put together money to continue building the wall. And so there was a way to go look at drug forfeiture money, $600 million there. There was the $1.37 billion that was authorized by Congress. That's included in the $8 billion. Then there were some other the only part that fell under the National Emergency Declaration was the $3.5 billion in Defense Department building fund. And by the way, those were for projects that are 5 years out. Their budget, like we pulled, because you hear Democrats say, this is going to destroy the military. Their budget, Department of Defense, is $668 billion a year. These projects are for 5 years out. Over the next 5 years, I have a feeling their coffers of $3 billion will be able to be refilled a number of times.
Here's what the ACLU said. The American Civil Liberties Union said it was preparing a lawsuit arguing that Trump cannot legally redirect taxpayer money during an emergency, quote unquote, unless it's for military construction projects that support the armed forces. And that is just fundamentally not correct, Andy.
Not true. It's not at all true. I don't know where they come up with that. I'm reading 50 U.S. Code 1621. I'm a textualist. I read the law, and I would apply the law as it is written. And it says, with respect to acts of Congress authorizing the exercise during the period of a national emergency or of any special or extraordinary power, the president is authorized to declare such national emergency, and the definition is left to the president. That is something that Congress, in enacting this law in 1976, said is the president's determination as to what is the national emergency.
That's the Article II Declaration, basically, Harry.
Absolutely, and Congress has the power and authority to revoke or repeal this legislation. So if they truly believe the president doesn't have the power or shouldn't have the power, let them repeal the law. I think they will find that that's very, very difficult to do, but they gave the president the power. He's exercising it.
So
he has the power to do that.
The Attorney General of California, you know, is trying to explain on these interviews how there's this national emergency out there. Listen to the rest of the explanation.
Once we are all clear, all the different states are clear of what pots of money that taxpayers sent to D.C. he's going to raid, which Congress dedicated to different types of services, whether it's emergency response services for whether it's fires or mudslides in California, maybe tornadoes and floods in other parts of the country, or whether it's our military men and women and their families who live on military installations that might have money taken away from them, or whether it's money taken away from drug interdiction efforts in places like California. A number of states and certainly Americans will be harmed, and we're all going to be prepared.
What is that? You know, this is...
I mean, because what does that even remember, mean? That's not California's money. It sounds like he's talking about, like, California's money.
Right.
The truth is the federal government could decide, you know, we're going to prioritize Texas over California.
Right.
I mean, California can't say, no, you can't do that. There's federal taxpayer dollars. There's state taxpayer dollars. Federal is for the federal government to decide what is the greatest threat to our country or what's in the best interest of our nation. And so this idea that, well, this may impact California a certain way because the drug corridor funds may be going one place and not the other. I think that, again, that's the confusion of, one, how much power these state attorney generals have. Two, they're used to living in a Ninth Circuit where
right.
which generally finds in their favor when they're opposed to any kind of Republican or conservative. And so they're looking – I think they're looking forward to a couple of victories, but they're very scared of what ultimately comes.
Well, and they lose in the Supreme Court. But then also this is all politics. I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah, it's all politics. You listen to that statement, and with all due respect, the Javier Becerra is either confused or he's intentionally misleading, because the drug interdiction money, Jay, does not require a national
right.
emergency. So the president can make that move without the national emergency. And then second, when he's talking about the military construction funding, that's Section 2808. Again, that's a section that Presidents Bush and Obama used 18 times. So unless he's going to make the case that all 18 of those were also a violation, he's got no leg to stand on.
All right, we're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. Coming up the last segment of the broadcast means you can ask us a question on any topic, 1-800-684-3110. Don't forget, ACLJ tomorrow filing a document with HHS, Health and Human Services, on the issue of life. Your support for the American Center for Law and Justice allows us not just to talk about it, not just to broadcast it, not just to keep you informed, but to take legal action. At the same time, as C.C. Heil, our senior counsel, just said, we've got a very aggressive four weeks on behalf of Pastor John Saul, who is in jail in China. He's a permanent American resident and is in jail in China. His family are U.S. citizens, but he's a permanent resident of the United States, and we're working desperately and aggressively to seek his release. Back with your calls at 800-684-3110 in just a moment.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. The United States of America must never become a socialist nation. Yet the radical left is trying to force a new socialist agenda on the American people, the Green New Deal, and other extreme measures. We already know that the liberal left has embraced born-alive abortion and the anti-Semitic, anti-Israel BDS movement. And now this dangerous push to embrace socialism. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we've developed a 5-point legal advocacy effort to defeat this socialist agenda. 1. Expose socialism. 2. Prepare critical legal analysis. 3. Show how socialism subverts the rule of law. 4. Battle against it on Capitol Hill. And 5. Hold radical left politicians accountable. At the ACLJ, we're committed to this fight, to stop this radical agenda, to stop the destruction of our Constitution. But we can't do it alone.
Stand with us. Take action with us. Sign on today to our petition to stop the radical left socialist agenda. Add your name right now online, aclj.org.
So Heather on Facebook says, why is China holding the pastor? They always say they're violating some, you know, spying, espionage. That's always what it is. But there is a, we've talked about this during the break, there is a real crackdown in China right now, Jordan, on Christianity. Big
yeah.
time.
Oh,
big,
yeah, that's right. And big crackdown. There's a crackdown, so at the national level, on these, China has state-sanctioned churches, churches that they allow to operate. There's a lot of discussion amongst the Christian community in China about whether or not it's right to even be part of those churches. But they've been allowed to operate and preach a fairly evangelical message. They just don't get involved in politics. Those are being shut down. The house churches are being shut down as well. So the sanctioned and unsanctioned churches that have been allowed are being shut down entirely. And so it's no surprise then that when you get into outlying regions outside the main cities, that someone like Pastor Saw could get picked up and being treated this way, because it actually, the ideology gets more extreme the further you get away from the major cities in China. So the further you get away from Beijing, the further away you get away from Shanghai, the more Maoist and the more communist ideology at all aspects of life. It's not the same as how I think the national government is. They don't like the Christian movement at all. They don't like any movements that aren't Chinese movements part of the Communist right. Party. But they also care more about economics than they do ultimately ideology at this point in their iteration of Chinese communism.
All right, let's go ahead and take some calls. 1-800-684-3110. We'll do them in the order that you've been holding.
Yeah, let's go to Mary in Houston, Texas, on line one. Mary, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey, Mary, you're on the air.
Hey, guys. Thanks for all you do for getting the truth out to us. My question is, on the national media, they keep talking about these senators, these Republican senators that are against what the president is doing. Can you name them? I've never heard them named.
Van and Jordan?
Yeah, I think there's a very important distinction to make here, Jay. I think there's probably only one senator who actually has a problem with the authority as we're talking about, and that would be Senator Rand Paul. He has some reservations on this. Jay, there are some others who have a policy disagreement on whether or not it is time to invoke that authority. But again, I think even those senators would recognize that that is the president's decision to make. Ultimately, we'll have a vote on it. Jay, I don't think there's any way it gets to that 67-vote threshold for overriding a veto. But the distinction between the authority to make the call and whether or not a particular senator thinks it's the right policy call for him to make, those are two separate questions.
No, that is.
Yeah, and I think so. For the ones that don't like it, I think we've heard from Murkowski, Collins, Marco Rubio to some extent, and then Rand Paul. But I'd caution that they would necessarily vote and say that the president doesn't have the authority under the existing law to do this. They have an issue with the existing law and how the law has been allowed to develop.
They don't like the law.
Over time. Right. And again, the courts have always said, you don't like the law, Congress, you Change fix it. The law. It's not that it's the law violates
the Constitutional Republic sets up. I mean, we have separate branches of government. They can fix problems. Let's go ahead and take another call.
Jay in Utah, online too. Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Jay.
Oh, thank you. Just a really quick comment. If I was to win the lottery, I would probably give you $50 million for your efforts that you're doing. Really appreciate it. The question is, if Congress does change the law, does that mean the other 31 national emergencies, are they eliminated?
Harry?
Well, I think the caller is on to something. Certainly, if Congress changed the authority of the president to issue a national emergency, that would potentially undercut every existing national emergency regulation, and maybe those would have to be withdrawn or there would be a basis to challenge them in court. That's number one. But number two, even if Congress voted to change the law, it's doubtful that President Trump would sign the law. More likely than not, he would veto it. And so then Congress would be left with the task of overriding a presidential veto. And so,
which we don't see that happening.
And
right.
So that's very, very unlikely.
Not Jordan, you're saying, no.
No, I don't even think they would pass the resolution of the Senate.
I don't think so either.
I mean, the House might be able to, but the Senate will not. It's a Republican
So it doesn't happen. And then even if it does, they're not going to have a veto-proof majority. And the president would rather be with the American people on this. He'd veto it.
All right. Let's take another call, 1-800-684-3110.
Janet in Dallas, Texas, on line 3. Janet, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Thank you, Jay.
Sure.
Jay, I was wondering, how long and what kind of time frame are we looking at for the courts to decide on the wall?
So it could, I mean, look, these things don't generally move really, really quick. I mean, it could be expedited in one sense, but I expect that it's going to take, my guess, that's what this is at this point, is a guess, that we're looking at least a year of litigation here, I think, to get it to the Supreme Court to a decision.
Yes, and you're talking about as if an injunction gets issued. So that's before the case has really been heard. So that's the big legal issue here is, does a court say we're going to issue an injunction against
it.
Any kind of use of the $3.5 billion, by the way. So the wall can keep being built with the other
right.
$4.5 billion. But for this $3.5 billion at issue with the National Emergency Declaration, is an injunction issued, then that will get appealed of is the injunction well, to the Ninth Circuit.
Appealing injunctions are not that easy,
no.
And courts don't jump into those. So, Harry, but I think, look, I think the legal standing issue here is so significant, this may never see – I don't know if it ever gets adjudicated.
I think you're precisely correct. And so far, at least based on my reading of news reports, no one has articulated a sufficient legal ground to challenge the president's authority in court. That's number one. Number two, to reiterate what we've said before, Congress has the power and authority to override the president's declaration if they can muster the votes, which is a highly doubtful proposition.
And that is the, Andy, that's the fundamental problem that exists here. Now, the politics of this, though, are aggressive. So that's why you're hearing the language you're hearing from all of these individuals.
Yeah, well, it's all the things that are coming from the left and the Democrats in opposed to this are politically motivated. They don't want the wall. They don't want the wall because they want the immigrants to pour in because they vote Democrat. I mean, we know that. And so what they're doing is they're pulling out these most ridiculous arguments about the national emergency not being within the purview of the president. The statute says it is within the purview of the president. And what do? They resort, as they always do, to the courts, to friendly courts to give them friendly decisions. I think they may get some friendly decisions initially, but I don't think the Supreme Court of the United States is going to override this national emergency declaration of the president.
That's where I think this comes out at the end of the day. And Than, do you think this really has any chance of any kind of legislative override of the president here?
No, I don't think there's any way they can get to the two-thirds margin. And quite frankly, Jay, I think the first action they take, taking up this resolution of disapproval, I think that's one of the reasons the Supreme Court will rule against them in the first place. I think the Supreme Court will say, if you want to end this, find the votes in your own chamber.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, it's a basic separation of powers argument.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, when you take all of the wall, no wall, you know, the kind of the noise around it, and you get to the legal issue, it's not that complicated.
No, it's not like some gray area of presidential constitutional authority. It's a statute that exists on the books, and I think most courts would honestly say is, you don't like how this has been utilized, change the law, Congress. You have the ability to do that, and again, pass a statute, pass something to veto proof.
All right, that's going to do it for the broadcast today. Again, support the work of the ACLJ as we're battling for Pastor Saul's release, but also fighting for life right here in Washington tomorrow as we submit these comments to Health and Human Services. All that going on, your support of the ACLJ makes a huge difference. You could do that by going to ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. And also, don't forget, stay engaged with us on social media. That includes Facebook and Twitter. And we encourage you to engage with us on those various social media platforms. That's going to do it for the broadcast today. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
The United States of America must never become a socialist nation. Yet the radical left is trying to force a new socialist agenda on the American people. The Green New Deal and other extreme measures. At the ACLJ, we're committed to this fight, to stop this radical agenda, to stop the destruction of our Constitution. But we can't do it alone. Stand with us. Take action with us. Sign on today to our petition to stop the radical left socialist agenda. Add your name right now online, aclj.org.